travelers, and welcome to the Traversing the Stars podcast. Today's special guest is Kenny Porter. You know him as the writer behind Flash, the fastest man alive, based on the upcoming Flash movie starring Ezra Miller. Now come join me as we go traversing the stars. Hello, Mr. Porter. Thank you for coming to the Traversing the Stars podcast.
Hey, Jeff. Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
It's totally my pleasure, sir. So I always like to start off with this question, especially for my writers. What inspired you to become a writer, and who were your earliest influences?
Ooh, yeah, okay, that's a good question. So I'd loved stories ever since I was a kid. Like, I couldn't get enough TV, books, comics. Like, I used to go to the Scholastic Book Fair, drop every dollar I had on just, like, Goosebumps books and tear through them so fast, like, to the point where my mom tried to tell me to stop reading them so quickly. So, obviously, like, that sort of, like, pulpy kind of thing with Goosebumps is really big. And then in the 90s, I grew up down the road from a comic book shop, so I was going and buying as many, like, quarter bin issues of Spider-Man or X-Men and everything that I could. In fact, I was telling somebody the other day, the first issue of X-Men I ever bought, I always forget the number, but it's the one where they're not even in costume, and they just go to the bar, and the Juggernaut and Colossus get in a fist fight, which was, like, a crazy thing for, like, your first X-Men comic book. Like, nobody's wearing a costume, and they're just, like, at a bar. It's so crazy. But yeah, in high school, like, I grew up also, I was really into screenwriting and stuff. So I was trying to teach myself how to do that. So I was reading, like, a lot of Kevin Smith stuff. And I was a big fan of Douglas Adams, like, in terms of the prose side. So I really liked Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy and Dirk Gently's List of Detective Agency. So those were really big influences of mine when I was younger. And then when I got older, in terms of comics, like, I'm a big fan of Jason Aaron. Like, when I was getting back into comics, like, I really love all his creator-owned stuff. His superhero work is amazing. Like, I wasn't a Thor fan until I read God of Thunder. Like, that was absolutely stunning. And in terms of, like, other reading or things that influence me, I read as much as I possibly can, man. I love American comics, love manga. I love bande dessinée from France. Like, I'll take in anything in a graphic format, I'll read it. And, like, any type of genre too. I love the slice of life stuff or the romance stuff just as much as I love, like, superhero and action things. So I try to, like, have a diverse reading pool so that I can pull a lot from different sources.
Well, I would say Jason Aaron, I got to talk to him. He's a really cool guy. That guy is awesome.
Oh, yeah, he was so nice. So I met him when I was first starting out at a Comic-Con in Cincinnati. It's not the one that they still have, but it was a smaller one that I think Tony Moore had put on, called Cincy or CincyCon or something. I think they only did it a couple of times. I'm not sure if they still do it just because I haven't been back to the city. But yeah, I asked him for advice because at the time I had just had a comic come out from Top Cow. I won the first Top Cow talent hunt for writing. So I was asking him advice about stuff coming out, and he was super nice. He was like, I was in a very similar position. This is what you got to do, man. And, like, he didn't have to take that time with me and talk to me like that, but he did, and he was super nice about it and really helpful.
Yeah, and I think it's awesome that you also mentioned the Top Cow talent hunt, because they're still, I think they're literally doing it right now. I see Matt Hawkins posting it, I think just even a couple of days ago, that the Top Cow talent hunt. So for those our listeners who are into that, as the first winner, what advice do you have for them?
So I think from what I understand of how mine got picked was that I made sure to try to think of something that was, like, so original that it would stand out. A lot of what I read about the first group of submissions, because I think the rules change every year in terms of, like, the parameters, because with mine it was you have X, these, like, three or four characters, and you need to pitch for one of them what you would do with it. And I think Matt had said that a lot of people turned in the pitch that was, like, very samey. Like, everybody had turned in basically the same idea. And so I tried to go way out there with, like, something that I knew could only work in a comic and, like, could only be told with these characters. So if anybody's doing that, depending on what the parameters are now, I don't know if they give you more of a launching point or anything. I would tell people, like, to put a lot of yourself in it and to try to be as original as you can with your idea.
You know, I think that's awesome. And I really do like the fact that that exists. It seems like it's one of the few talent hunts directed towards writers. Almost everything is art-based. It's very rare to see a writer-based talent hunt. You know?
Yeah, it was awesome. It was a, like, great experience. And I got to work on, like, and establish characters within the like the Top Cow universe, so, like especially focused around like Witchblade in the Darkness and the artifacts sort of thing. And I got to work with an editor for the first time, which was awesome. It was a really cool experience and a great way to sort of break in and like get my foot in the door, especially with writing characters that were ones that I didn't come up with originally.
Now, were you a fan of the characters prior to entering the contest, or did you do research on them prior to just start writing it?
A little bit of both. So the character I did was Tom Judge, who I wasn't familiar with. I'd known Witchblade in the Darkness. Witchblade because my cousin had some of the comics, and then there was that TV show in the 90s that was on too, and I'd seen episodes of that, so I was familiar with Witchblade. And then the Darkness, my cousin also had a couple issues of the Darkness, and then there was the like popular video games too. So I played a little bit of those. Oh, my buddy like mainlined them and played it all one night in front of me. I got to play twice, but yeah. So I was familiar with the general universe, but with Tom Judge, like I had to do a lot more research into that because I didn't know anything about him or the artifact or like powers that he had and stuff. So I had to do that in order to figure out like what's a Tom Judge type story.
You know, that's also, you know, people talk a lot about modern era as being like the best one for comic books. The 90s had some good shit, like Witchblade and
there's really, you know, good Kaboom. Yeah,
and the 90s, what I remember most about the 90s was there seemed to be a comic book store always nearby me. It's not anymore. Now there's not even one in my city, really. But back then, it was like you could just walk to your comic book store, you know?
Yeah, mine was literally like a block and a half, 2 blocks away. Like, I'd fill up my little, like, neon yellow shorts. It was the 90s. And with clinking change and go down there and buy as many as I can. I remember there was an Aliens comic from Dark Horse that I wanted really bad. And it was the most expensive comic I'd ever seen at that time. And so I kept running back home to grab more coins, like without counting, just to like run back and forth. I went 3 or 4 times until the owner, she was just like, you can just have it. Like if you want it that bad, you can just have it. Yeah.
How much was it?
That was really nice there. It was like $6 or $7. And so I was just like grabbing as many coins as I could fit in those tiny little pockets and running like back and forth trying to get it. But yeah, it was an expense because it was like a thicker, like deluxe one shot that I wanted really bad.
She probably was like, I'm not counting all this fucking change.
Yeah, exactly. That's half of it. She's like, he really wants it. I'm not counting any more pennies and nickels. Like, he can just have it. I'm done.
That's awesome. So you graduated from the Grand Valley State University with a bachelor's in writing. But I think it's very kind of interesting is that you also on your website have a very interesting quote from Neil Gaiman. It says, partially, I'm not going to read the whole part, but it basically, he learned to write by writing. So when you go to the university for teaching about writing, what did you learn from the university that maybe experience wouldn't have gotten you?
Okay. So that's a good question. Cause at the same time, so while I was, writing comics, I was going to Grand Valley and I got the Top Cow win while I was in school. So I was already trying to find like mentors and make friends and everything in the comics industry while I was in school, which was really helpful because I got an outsider perspective. The thing with that school gave me that I wouldn't have gotten out there was like the large workshop format without having to do that somewhere else. So I got to, you know, work more on fiction and work on my prose and get feedback in that sense. And I had some really good teachers who helped me develop my voice. On the other side of that, I did join comic book focused workshops and everything so that I could write scripts and get feedback. So I was trying to just maximize the amount I could learn about telling stories in one format, and then especially like the medium of comics in another. So I was just trying to like fill the gap there and also just kind of like build some skills to make sure that I could actually eat after college.
So back when you went to college at, Grand Valley State. Was that prior to, like, once again, the current comic boom? Because I know universities have started having actual majors in comic books over the last, I think it's over the last 10 years, that's really become a thing. But when you started, was that still a thing at university, or was comic books still kind of the outskirts, like, well, it's kind of like writing, but not, you know, people are not really counting it as part of the writing experience?
Yeah, it was on the outskirts. Some people were bringing it in, like a friend of mine who's a professor. I took his class at a community college I went to first, and he, like Watchmen was a part of his curriculum. But in terms of like the broader comic stuff, the writing department wasn't necessarily into that. So there were a couple of times when I tried to argue when I was doing stories, I was like, hey, like, I've heard you've let some people do screenplays. Like, can I do comic scripts like for some of my stories? And they're like, I don't know what that is. No. Yeah, so that wasn't like, it wasn't as embraced. I've heard it's a little bit more embraced now. We did do, I think, a unit on comics in my capstone class, which is like the big final thing where you put all your final materials together. And I kind of took that over just because I was the person who had experience with it the most. So I talked about that medium quite a bit and kind of derailed the conversation. I've gone back to talk there once or twice to the capstone classes about comics and making comics. But yeah, it was more, we talked about it a little bit, but it definitely, the only comics that were allowed to be talked about were mostly Mouse in the, in some of the literary classes. And then there was another one, not Watchmen at Grand Valley, because I did that at, I can't remember, but there was another one where it's mostly just like, it might have been Fun Home. So it was mostly just like anything autobio or very specific, like we would do that. And those are great books, but like it was mostly like it's those or nothing. Like we won't talk about anything else.
You know, it's kind of funny. It's sort of like once movies start making billions of dollars, suddenly they become counted literature in the comic book world, you know?
So, yeah.
Yeah, they became a big thing in the industry, and they're like, okay, you know what? Maybe they're literature after all. We're going to teach that. You know, they realize everyone would come to college for comic books, but. Yeah, I think that's awesome. And I also think it's interesting that, once again, a common theme on the show, and I talk to a lot of writers, is the idea that becoming a good writer, no matter what you're writing, helps you be a good writer in everything you're writing.
You know? Oh, yeah, totally.
And I think that's great.
Because, yeah, like, because I spend a lot of time writing, like, marketing. Like, a lot of my day job stuff is in marketing, so I've had to deal a lot of, in, like, copywriting, and writing for the web and everything. So a lot of that has helped me learn to be more concise and especially like more direct, especially if I had to explain stuff that's really complicated. So hopefully that helps a lot when I'm talking to artists and I'm like, listen to this batshit crazy thing that I want to explain for someone to draw, to try to lay it out. But I do always put the preface like, if this doesn't make sense, do something else. Like, I'm just trying to explain it the best that I can, or we can jump on the phone or something.
Did you slip into your copyright, but like for marketing, just like Spider-Man would do in issue 355, you know, you do your copyright.
Yeah, there. Exactly. Yeah. Much like issue 2, whatever, of X-Men when they go to the bar.
Yeah, so this is a great way to advertise a bar. Think about what Colossus just said.
Yeah, think about what you have to ask yourself with your bar business is it juggernaut proof? That's what you have to ask yourself. Look at your business plan.
You know, that'd be great. And I'll see your copyright material selling on Diamond and like mycomicshop.com or something. I'd be like, oh, he did it. He sold his stuff on his copyright material. Recently you've been announced as the writer for the upcoming Flash Fast Man Alive series, which is kind of a prequel to the Flash movie that's coming out, I believe, in November.
Yeah, I think that's when the movie drops. Yeah, it's a series of one-shots that take place between the Justice League story and then the Flash story as he's like learning to develop his powers and trying to become a hero in his own right. Because if I remember correctly, like when we go through that in Justice League, like he hasn't really been acting as the Flash. So this is really about like him coming up as a hero and like all those trials and tribulations.
So how did you get involved with that? Did they reach out to you? Did you hear about it and you're like, I can write that?
Yeah, I showed up with like with the Flash symbol spray painted on my chest outside the DC offices. I was like, pick me. One of the editors I work with, who's amazing, his name's Andrew, he approached me because he thought I'd be a good fit for it. And he was basically like, if you could tell Flash stories within this time frame, like what would you want to do? So I was like, okay, well, I'd want to kind of approach it. Like I mentioned, I'm a big manga fan. Like if he's learning to use powers and stuff, like I want to approach it kind of like a shonen manga where he's like a little bit cocky because he's coming off of like a big win, but he's going to go through all these like big emotions and big losses and everything as he's learning like new abilities that he has. Like relationships are changing and everything. So I pitched it that way and he really liked it. and I fleshed out all the stories, and the team thought it was great, so I got to go to the races. So a really awesome thing about it is, like, there's stories I came up with, which is super cool, and they're like flash stories that I tried to write that would be a good entry point to anybody who's like either is a longtime fan of the Flash and wants to like relive those days when he's, you know, not quite the best at it just yet and just starting out. And then I wanted it to be a really good complete adventure for people who are just like, it might be their first Flash comic. Like maybe they just really are excited about the movies, or maybe like they like the Flash, but they don't know where to jump in. So I wanted to create like a single volume where it was like, this is a good essence of what it's like to read a Flash story.
Now, obviously the comic book Flash and the movie Flash are a little bit different how they're portrayed. So when you're writing the Flash comic book of this one, for the movie, did you definitely make it the Flash movie version, or is there a bit of the Flash comic book version in there?
I definitely, like, I rewatched both the original cut of the movie and the Snyder cut, just so I wanted to make sure that I could get any scenes with Ezra Miller in it to make sure that I could kind of get that voice down. So it is definitely this universe's version of the Flash, like personality, the way he talks and everything. I had to make sure that anytime I was writing lines that it was like this version of Barry Allen. Mm-hmm. I basically approached it like an Elseworlds book where I was like, this is this universe's version. So I need to make sure that when he talks or makes decisions and stuff, it's based on what this version of the character would do. So that was kind of my approach to the way of writing him, especially like in his dialogue and the way he would handle problems.
So when you're thinking about, you know, how to fit it into this world, are you looking at the Josh Whedon version as the continuity version, or is it Zack Snyder director's cut that's the continuity version that you're looking at?
So I didn't actually know. So I just knew that it was like Flash stories that took between. So all I knew, it was like, it was the Flash between Justice League and between the Flash movie. And I don't know what happens in the Flash movie. So like, I basically came up with the idea and I was like, is this okay? And they're like, this slaps, doesn't touch anything that we need to do. You're good. So I, like I said, like when I got the job, they were like, just kind of like, make sure you get the vibe of the Ezra Miller Flash. So I'm not really sure which of those is necessarily canon. So I'm not really the person to ask for that. What I did was like, I focused just on the Flash, since that was the story, and I just set it in the same world as the movies.
So, I mean, it must be hard to write the character to lead into a movie you've not seen. You know, I mean, was there some trepidation to, maybe I should not say this, or maybe I can say this, because in the movie, they could either trample completely all over it, or I'm writing this in a way that the movie's going to have to visit because they're already going to handle this part of a life that I kind of already wrote about, you know?
Yeah, man. No, I just, when I took the job, I was like, I'm going to approach it that they're just like, they're their own isolated stories with this version of the character. Like they'll be complete stories, but it won't necessarily completely shatter everything that's going on. Like I just wanted to tell like good complete stories with them, so I just didn't worry about what was going to happen. Like I just wanted to make sure that the actual comics were good, so I just made sure that they were like good fun stories that anyone could enjoy, and I didn't necessarily worry. Like I figured if I did something that was going to mess up with something, they would have said, like they would have raised a red flag, but they were all good with the stories that I put together, so I was really happy to do it.
So the stories that you chose for the series, are these kind of standalone stories, or are these stories that, because once again, as a writer, you're thinking of a character arc, but your arc is being affected by what could happen as an arc later on. So it was there a thought of, you know, are these stories that, I think the best way to phrase it, where
I think I get what you're
a certain level of impact has to maybe not exist or has to exist based on what you're going to, or you're allowed maybe to do as well.
Yeah. So they do build on each other. They're just like deluxe size one shots. So what happened? So in order, like 1, 2, and 3, like 1 happened and 2 maybe happened some indeterminate time afterwards. And they do build on each other, because like a skill he learns in 1, he'll use in 2 and, you know, use in 3. So there is an overall, like there is an overall like glue that holds it all together, kind of like if I had to liken it to something like are you a Doctor Who fan at all?
Yes, I am. Oh, especially Matt Smith, but yes.
Okay, yeah. So like how a Doctor Who season would have like the A plot would be what's going on that week, and the B plot would be the overall story of like the season. That's kind of how I approached it, of like the A plot is what's going on in that issue, and the B plot is the overall like him trying to learn to become like Central City's hero on his own.
So because it was accepted, I mean, a lot of people are going to be reading this comic book of yours because it's going to come out, I think it comes out in April, is that correct?
Yeah.
And it's three issues?
Yep, three 38 pages.
All right, so it comes from April to July, the movie comes out in November. You know readers are going to be picking apart going, so if this isn't this, so the movie must also contain something similar because it says it in the Flash.
I'm going to tell you right now, guys, like I don't know what happens in the movie. Can't speak to the movie at all. I just know what they let me put in there. So I wouldn't be looking for like any hidden meanings of anything. Like these are just stories to just enjoy with this version of the character. So
you know that, what's that meme where there's that poster in the background, the guy's like pointing to it like he's trying to figure it out, like all the strings are attached to different clues.
Oh yeah, from It's Always Sunny with
the
yeah.
People would be doing that with their comic book, like pages would be ripped out on the poster board. Lines crossing.
Yeah. If people want to do that, more power to you. But I'm going to tell you right now, I'm not hiding anything in there.
So the as you said, the Flash from the Justice League movie is definitely a novice version of the Flash. I mean, they show there seems to be evidence that he did some Flash stuff in the Justice League movie, in the Suicide Squad, because I think he stopped one of the villains in the Suicide Squad movie. The Flash Justice League movie part has him stopping a crime at a grocery store, I think in the Batman versus Superman clip. But he's definitely a novice. So because he's a novice Flash, what kind of thought process do you give him as far as his early interactions with supervillains? Is he, you know, at all confident about that because he did, like, say, fight in Justice League? Is he a character that is still lost in finding himself?
Yeah, that's kind of what the whole series is about, is like he's got the big W from working with Batman and the others, and so he feels more confident about going out, like in the costume especially, but the stories are all going to kind of focus about how like he fought in that group setting, but like fighting on your own against like an unknown opponent, especially like I believe in the first issue we teased it's Girder, so that's like a dude who's super strong, made of metal, like him just hitting him is not going to work, sort of thing. So like all the stories are going to be about how as a novice Flash, like he's going to learn, like it's not just about moving quick, like there's way more to being heroic instead of just being faster than the other guy.
So we sat down and come up with a villain like Girder. Was the idea of selecting that villain who best fits the growth of the Flash, or was it more of use villains that you know are not going to be impacted probably from a future movie that they're going to stop you from using?
I picked characters that I just thought would be good thematically. So I picked characters that I thought fit story-wise the best for the types of story I wanted to tell. I can't get into too many details without knowing what each one's about, but I did pick each villain based on a lesson he had to learn, both like physically and mentally.
So from what I've read as well, is that the Ben Affleck Batman, or the Batfleck as people call him, appears in the comic book, is that correct?
Yes, in the first one shot.
So is he more of a mentor to the Flash, or does he serve a different role in this first issue?
I believe they say it in the solicit, like it's very much similar to the relationship that they have, like their status quo of like, you know, he's his first experience into the world of heroes. So like, as he develops a problem in this issue, the first person he thinks of going to is the person that, you know, brought him into the fold.
You know, I think it's also kind of interesting. Obviously the Batfleck, I guess I'm just gonna call him the Batfleck, screw it.
Most people call it that. Yeah,
the Batfleck, from what we hear and what the audience knows, is that his last appearance is at the beginning of the Flash movie. So your comic book contains one of the last appearances of the Batfleck in this cinema world. So when you're writing the character, is that something that's in mind that you're kind of also writing the end of his character as well on some level, because he's never going to return again.
So that I, when I started, did not know, because there was no trailer stuff that included any of that or any info. So all I knew is that he was there and was involved. So no, I didn't know any of that. So I just went in like telling a story that would make sense with those two versions of the character based on their relationship. So I just tried to tell an authentic story. I had no idea, like, in terms of what, and I still don't know what happens to the character or anything. Like, when I say I don't know what happens in the movie, I mean, like, they didn't tell me anything. Like, it was a look at my stories to make sure I didn't step on any toes, and then that's it. So I don't know what happens to him or anything like that. I know there's been, like, I've tried to stay away from anything related to, like, speculation, because I didn't want that to influence anything I was writing. So yeah, I wrote it just as, like, you know, this is how their relationship would be if these stories continued.
So, once again, when you're writing the Batman or the Batfleck version in your comic book, what did you see in the movie versions of, obviously, Batman vs. Superman and Justice League that helped inform how or what you thought his voice should be like in the comic book? Is there anything distinct to the Batfleck that may not be in a regular Batman title
picked up? So because in the movies, like, this version of Batman is so much like he had allegedly, like, quit and then come back. He has way more experience in terms of, like, fighting opponents that are stronger than him and everything. Mm. So I thought that he would operate a bit more tactically, and that would make sense, that coming from his character, like, his character background, in the appearances that we've seen Ben Affleck play him, that he would be someone who is definitely the more battle-hardened and understands a little bit more what to do in any given situation. So kind of leaning more into that version of, like, the always prepared Batman, and less like kind of the ultra detective Batman, just based on the versions that we've seen. So I tried to write it a little bit more like that, of the Batman who has a list of contingency plans for anything that could happen. Like every eventuality.
Kind of, I think they sometimes refer to that one as the guy Batman, the one who knows somehow knows everything's about to happen. You know, he's like, you know,
knows
like,
what you're gonna do before you do it.
Yeah, like, yeah. Like the shark, the anti shark spray he just happens to have on him because he might come into a shark. You remember, like, the
60s. Oh, yeah, man. Or just like the Grant Morrison version that they did, that was the Batman who's like completely always prepared, can take anybody down, sort of thing.
Yeah. Oh, prep time. You always got the prep time.
Yep, prep time. This one's got prep time baked in. So you just assume he had prep time.
So when you're writing a character like The Flash and Batman that's basically in a movie where you have actual actors playing the parts that, you know, you watch in motion, you hear their voices, as a writer, does it make it more or less difficult to write that character? Because you have to kind of not only write the character that you think should be, but now you're thinking about the cadence of that actor, how they would have performed it. Does that complicate things or make things easier?
It didn't complicate things at all. Like I said, I just kind of approached it as, like, this is an Elseworlds like version of these characters, where this is how they talk and this is how they act, and being able to hear that honestly, like, by ear was like really helpful in order to like parse out like sort of responses that they would have for stuff, or to get in the cadence in your head of, like, okay, this is kind of how they talk, this is how they would most likely respond. If this situation happened, how do I think they would resolve this issue? So I think it was helpful. I mean, even when I write like some other characters, like some other DC ones, I'll go to the Bruce Timm Justice League cartoon, just because, like, those are the voices I hear. And sometimes when I hear them, it's better to just be able to get that like cadence in my head of, like, all right, like, John Stewart always talks like this, like Superman should sound like this, at least in my head, they should sound that way. So it's helpful to be able to have that, to like play it in your head and then expand upon it.
Yeah. I will say though, that Justice League though, that's a great series to go to. I mean, the Timverse cartoons are some of the pinnacle of these characters, you know,
Oh yeah, totally. Like you need a distilled, like, what does Superman sound like when he's mad? You listen to Bruce Timm, disappointed dad Superman, you know exactly like what he sounds like when he's angry.
They really did a great job. And in the Justice League movie, that does have one of the greatest scenes is a Flash scene, the one where he's running towards Superman and as fast as he can, Superman turns his head.
That was a great reaction. Yeah.
Well, like, was that one of the moments that kind of popped in your head when you're thinking about these characters as well? Like, do you see the movie as now character moments that you could borrow for your comic book?
I took it more as inspiration of just like how, like I mentioned, of like getting in the head of like how this Flash would react to situations. So that is a good example of like him being taken aback by like, oh my God, he can see me, like that sort of thing, of like those realizations of like, I'm in over my head. So that was definitely, I used like to inform the take on the character.
So the three issues are coming out in April. So you're looking at April, May, and June. Are they all completed?
Yep.
Already?
I've written them all, and the artwork's coming in, and it all looks like Ricardo Lopez Ortiz, Juan Ferreira, and Jason Howard. Like, it's all banging. It's so good. So I wrote them to make sure that, like, they were super fun Flash stories that took advantage of, like, how the Flash can move on a page or the fun comic sort of stuff you can do, and each one of them is bringing their A game to it from everything I've seen from the layouts and the artwork so far.
Well, like I said, it sounds awesome. And I think, like I said, I really do think the fans of the movies are going to be hearing these comic books, just staring at every scene going, that's in the background. And I think it's going to be a huge hit with the fans, because let's face it, we haven't seen the Flash now. God, and how many years has it been since we saw the Ezra Miller Flash appear?
It's been a while, yeah.
It's been a while. So, I mean, this is going to be the first return to this character in probably 3 or 4 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would tell them, like, it's just enjoy the time. Like, I approached it as, like, I'm just going to enjoy the time with this version of the character. And, like I said, approached it like an Elseworlds book, where I was like, this is this alternate universe, and there's different rules here, and there's different setups. And I love Elseworlds books. So, like, I was, like, more than, like, once I knew that that was going to be the take, I was just, like, off, no pun intended, like, off to the races, like, ready to go, like, okay, I get it. I get the energy I need to bring to this. I get the tone. So yeah, I tell people to just have like a lot of fun with it, and to just like let the experience wash over them and enjoy the like crazy Flash antics.
You probably can't answer it, but I'm gonna ask you anyway. Are there whispers of doing more of these within the movie version comic books, especially after this movie premieres?
No idea.
No idea.
This is the only thing I know, the thing I did. So,
well, I hope so. So what else are you working on next?
I can't say on what the next thing is. That'll be announced soon. And then I'm working on a creator-owned project with Donny Cates and Ryan Stegman for their Vanish series. Yeah, I'm doing a spin-off that they announced that's directly related to the main book Vanish. That's a prequel that takes place in World War II with like Golden Age takes on the characters. I'm doing that with my buddy and artist Ryan Lee, who lived also a Michigan guy who's super talented. So we're doing that, and that's really fun. And then I'll have some more creator owned project stuff coming out later in the year.
Well, that's awesome. I mean, obviously Donny Cates is one of the hottest writers right now. And this is Vanish, is that actually, it must have come out of, very familiar with it, is that coming through like Image, or is this going through straight to digital?
It's Vanish will come out through Image, and their Substack. Like, if you're one of the paid subscribers, you get to see stuff early. And then this Vanish spinoff we're doing called The Golden War, that is going to, so like the main Vanish book, this is from how I understand it, the main Vanish book is going to come out regularly through Image. Vanish the Golden War will be exclusive digital through Substack for a while, until after everything's collected, and then you'll be able to buy it collected in some form later on down the road. At least that's what I think the plan is right now. I know it's going to start digitally on Substack as like an exclusive web version to build out the universe that they create over there, which is super fun. It's absolutely bonkers, the stuff that they let me do in it.
Well, I can't wait to read it. Once it's, I don't have Substack, so once it's collected, I'll definitely be able to read it.
Oh yeah,
I've not jumped into the Substack road yet. But it's sir, it's been awesome talking with you. I look forward to reading the new Flash series, Flash Man Alive. And when the Vantage prequel comes out and collected, please come back on anytime you want to talk about anything that you're making. You're creating.
Sure. Awesome, man. Yeah, thanks for having me. Thank you too.